And a very good morning to you. How are you doing? It's Sunday morning, March 3rd, 2019. It's grim, it's grey, it's a bit miserable here in South Manchester. But now we're together, you and I, so it doesn't matter. How are you doing? This is Sunday View. I'm going to look at the front pages of the UK's Sunday newspapers, and we're going to look at some stories inside those papers as well. There's a lot to talk about. As usual, it is a two-way conversation, so do chat to me through Twitter. My Twitter handle is at Richie Allen Show. You know that. At Richie Allen Show on Twitter. I look forward to hearing from you. Welcome to Sunday View.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Yeah, there'll be a little bit of Brexit. There will be a little bit. Don't worry about it, though. It won't take over the programme or anything like that. Don't worry your pretty little head. Lots of different topics on Sunday View. Welcome.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, it's good to be back. Thanks for the kind words on Twitter there, Gail, and one or two other people who missed Sunday View during the course of my illness. Thank you. I missed it as well, believe it or not. There's nothing worse than lying around ill, whether it's in bed or on the sofa. Nothing worse than it. Great to be back. Important that we do this every Sunday, that we have a conversation about these things, and we say the things that we wouldn't ordinarily expect to see, or we speak about things that we wouldn't ordinarily expect to see spoken about in the talk programmes on commercial and national radio and television. That's what it's all about. 3rd of March then, so winter's probably gone, isn't it? Did I see a report on Thursday or Friday that said over the course of the weekend and early into this coming week that we'd have all sorts of horrendous weather, including gale force winds and all of that? No sign of it anyway. They must have gotten it wrong, unless it's still to come. But the winter is behind us. Great stuff. It's Sunday View, so let's get straight into the papers. The Sunday Telegraph has some very interesting stories on the front page today. There's a few interesting stories, including the leading story. The headline is "Ban on Gag Orders That Stop Reports to the Police." Ban on gag orders that stop reports to the police. Now, I'd love to get into this next week with some legal experts, some men and women who understand the law better than me. I'll tell you why in a minute. This is being portrayed as a good thing this morning. Ban on gag orders that stop reports to the police. It's supposed to be good for victims of abuse in the workplace, you know, bullying and sexual harassment, but it maybe isn't so good. Anyway, employers will be banned from drawing up gagging orders that prevent staff reporting allegations of illegal harassment and discrimination to the police. These are government plans. Ministers are to announce a proposed change in the law that could eliminate clauses within confidentiality agreements that strip employees of their payoffs if they report allegations to the authorities. Now, I'm reading from the Sunday Telegraph, obviously. So that sounds good, doesn't it? That companies can't withhold payments or payoffs under confidentiality agreements if their former employees go to the authorities and complain. It looks very good. This is all about Sir Philip Green, this tycoon, this monumental arsehole Philip Green, who's run his empire, his companies into the ground, screwed pension funds, screwed the employees, couldn't give a damn about it. And it has been revealed that, well, he's been very, very, very naughty in terms of how he has behaved towards his employees. So that's where this is coming out of. Nazir Afzal, the former chief prosecutor in the Northwest, said some of the allegations against Green were on the face of it clearly of a criminal nature. Well, the Metropolitan Police said they were looking into these allegations. So under government proposals, ministers would introduce a provision into legislation stipulating for the very first time that workplace confidentiality agreements cannot be used to prevent or appear to discourage staff from reporting harassment or discrimination to the police. Right, now that sounds brilliant. But there were a couple of lawyers on Sky News this morning. I didn't record the audio because they didn't get into any great detail. But there were a couple of lawyers who said this is actually not going to work in favour of the victims. That this is a wonderfully clever, malevolent, Machiavellian thing that makes it look like it's good for workers, but in fact it isn't. Now I want to know why that is. And I don't know, maybe one of our listeners this morning is a lawyer or a barrister. If you are, drop me a line, let me know. Otherwise, I'm going to get some legal opinion on the programme next week. Right, so that's interesting. There's also a story on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph about student loans. If you're a student, it might be important to you. Get on to the front page of the Sunday Telegraph. But also on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph is this story. And it goes, well, the headline is, delay to Brexit is now unavoidable, says Barnier. Obviously, this is Michel Barnier, who's been heading up the European Union negotiating team over the last two and a bit years. Well, maybe not two and a bit years, since Article 50 was invoked. And in an interview with a Spanish newspaper, Barnier indicated that a technical extension would be needed to implement a deal. Basically, Barnier is saying, in the event that Parliament supports and votes for the deal, well, it won't matter. We'll need an extension anyway. This is like, I'm not going to swear today. I'm not. Not today. Not on Sunday View today. I'm not going to swear. No fucking way. Barnier, right, is saying, even if you do a deal with us now, we're going to have an extension anyway. We're going to have a delay. Right. Yeah. Now, this is everywhere this morning, but don't panic. I'm not going to subject you to too much of it, just a little bit, but you should be interested in it in terms of the way it's playing out exactly the way we thought it would. Now, this week just gone, or last week, I should say, the Labour Party did a massive flip-flop. Do you remember them, all the Labour MPs, before the last election saying they would honour the result of the referendum, come what may? Now, of course, Labour is backing a second referendum. So what about the hierarchy of the party? Well, Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell, the closest friend and ally of Jeremy Corbyn. John McDonnell was on Sky's Sophie Ridge on Sunday today. Is Labour betraying the result of the referendum? Is it flip-flopping the bejesus out of manifesto promises and election promises? Here's McDonnell.
Remember what we're doing at the moment. We're abiding by, first of all, our manifesto commitment. We said we'd respect the referendum, but we also said we wouldn't allow Theresa May to take us out of Europe with a reckless deal, and we would not support no deal. So what we're doing is exactly as our party conference unanimously decided. We're still arguing for our proposal, which is a deal we think can protect jobs and the economy. And we're still arguing if that doesn't go through, we should have a general election. But we've recognised that actually if we have to block no deal and to block a bad deal, well, we'll have to go back to the people themselves. And with my constituents, I think they'll understand that, because we can't allow a no deal or a bad deal to go through. That will affect their jobs and undermine our economy. But we've been forced into this by Theresa May delaying, running down the clock and not coming up with a compromise that we could all support.
John, you bastard. You lousy bastard, John. That isn't true. Now, look, I loathe Theresa May, one of the most corrupt human beings in living history and living memory. Google HSBC, Google loans to the Conservative Party, Google her husband. This is a dreadful woman. And of course, she is in favour of staying in the European Union. Of course she is. But she hasn't run down the clock. That isn't true. It isn't true. The European Union has run down the clock, not the government. The European Union always had it as their negotiating strategy. It's done it time and time and time again over the years. When countries rejected treaties that gave more and more and more power to the European Union executive, right? It obfuscated, it delayed, it runs the clock down, panic stories about what's going to happen, and it gets its way. That's what's happened. It was very obvious. And David Davis, the old army man, the first Brexit secretary. Now, don't think that I'm an idiot. I've said before, I know what Davis and Liam Fox and Jacob Rees-Mogg and Boris Johnson would do. They wouldn't do anything good. They're not in it for the people either, right? So by quoting them and endorsing their quotation, I'm not saying that these are great. I'm not saying that. But David Davis said this from the word go. This was the thing. The European Union was never going to agree any deal. It was going to let it run down, let it run down, let it run down. And that's what's happened. Now, the flip-flop from the Labour Party. Has it screwed Labour's chances of winning the next election because so many Labour constituencies, particularly in the north of England, where I am now, well, I'm in the northwest, so many Labour constituencies voted to leave because they know what the European Union has done to them, to their job prospects, to their future prospects. So by endorsing a second referendum, have you screwed your chances, John McDonnell, of winning the next election? Again, he's with Sophie Ridge.
Do you know, there's something beyond electoral calculations, and it's the interest of the country. It's the people's jobs. It's their livelihoods. It's the long-term future of our economy. And we, you know, as politicians now, I think we've got to stand up and put the interests of the country first. And actually, yes, you could look at party advantage, but that isn't where we're at the moment. Where we're at is saying that we've got to be honest with people. You know, people have had enough of politicians who say one thing and actually do another. What we're saying is we said we'd respect the referendum, but we also said we can't allow a reckless Brexit the way Theresa May is bringing it forward. We can't allow no deal because it will have such dire consequences for us all in the long-term future. And we've got to be honest with people about that.
We've got to be honest with people about that. I love the way McDonald could say that and not laugh. Not laugh out loud. People will understand. They'll understand why we said we'd honour the referendum result, but that we wanted a deal that would protect jobs and industry and all that bollocks that they talk. People will understand. I've a message for John McDonnell. Not that he'll ever receive it. No chance. But I think Labour voters will understand in the same way that Liberal Democrat supporters understood when Nick Clegg raped them on tuition fees. Do you remember that? Do you remember pre-2010 general election? Do you remember the campaigning for the 2010 general election? Do you remember the biggest campaign pledge in the Lib Dem manifesto at the time? It was their rock star promise. And that was, we will abolish tuition fees. What did the Lib Dems do and Nick Clegg, the dirty old bastard? Well, they went into coalition with the Tories and they ripped up their promise to abolish tuition fees. So if I was John McDonnell, I wouldn't be getting too excited now about, well, I think the Labour voters will be okay. They'll understand. Sure they will, John. The Sunday Times, then, the front page, Brexiteers offer peace terms to May. This is nearly the end of Brexit there. So I know. We've a divided audience here. A lot of you want to hear the Brexit stuff. Other listeners are sick of it. I'm sick of it myself. I'm sick of it. I am. Sick to death of it, because I know what's going to happen. We're never and never were going to leave the European Union. So I just wanted to be done with. Not so I can say I told you so, but at least so that we won't have to talk about it anymore. So the Sunday Times, the headline is Brexiteers offer peace terms to May. Now, the European Research Group, the ERG, led by Jacob Rees-Mogg, terminological inexactitude, darling, and Johnson and the rest of them, the hardline Brexiteers, allegedly, have drawn up three tests. And these tests are tests the government must pass if Theresa May wants to win the vote, which might be early next week. So a week tomorrow or a week on Tuesday, May might take her deal with the European Union back to Parliament. Before that, the European Research Group are kind of kind of romancing Theresa May by saying we would be prepared to back your deal if it passes three tests. Now, the Sunday Times calls this a significant intervention because eight European research group lawyers, why do they need eight of them? Unbelievable, isn't it? Millions squandered. Why do you need eight? But anyway, eight ERG lawyers, chaired by Eurosceptic Sir Bill Cash, have drawn up a document spelling out their demands, the clearest sign yet that they are prepared to toe the line. Now, their demands are fairly obvious. They want it to be made clear that the Northern Ireland backstop, which you are sick of hearing about, which locks the UK into a customs union with the EU, is only temporary. So the European Research Group want absolute assurances that this backstop is only temporary. However, the European Union said again yesterday that it can't be temporary. We want to lock the UK into a customs union forever. Then you won't have actually left the European Union, boys. Do you get it, do you? You get it, right. That's the way it's going. So that's their main test of the three tests. They want this backstop thing to be only temporary. Some people are saying, the very Fox News thing to say, some people are saying, well, they are, some other hardline Brexiteers, namely Conservative Party supporters, are saying that this is a sign that Rees Mogg and Boris Johnson, so scared of a delay, so scared of a second referendum, that they are prepared to go along with Theresa May. Is that true? Well, Conservative radio host Julia Hartley Brewer, Brexiteer herself, was on The Mar Show this morning on the BBC. Let's hear what she has to say. Are the Brexiteers now starting to crack? Are they giving ground, Julia Hartley Brewer?
Well, from my conversations with the members of the ERG this morning, it doesn't sound like it at all. They're being, they say, very reasonable. They are offering terms in which, look, we can't vote for the withdrawal agreement right now, but we could if you brought back the things. And in fact, we're talking of three tests. It's basically one test. It's the Irish backstop. There are actually lots of other issues that are wrong with the withdrawal agreement, which have been outlined by everybody on all sides, Remain and Leave. But actually, the key thing comes down to, can we have an Irish backstop that's temporary, that we can leave unilaterally, and that all of the departure and removal of the Irish backstop is legally binding?
And they're also asking for either a time limit or a unilateral escape clause, and the EU are saying absolutely clearly still, no way.
Exactly. Well, this is it. I mean, the EU and Barnier has said, you know, even if there was a delay, it would have to be for a specific reason, and there doesn't see any reason why that should happen. But yeah, the headline inside the Sunday Times from Tim Shipman and Caroline Wheeler is climb down. But again, with a question mark. The reality is, you know, that if she brings this withdrawal agreement back as it stands, she's not going to get it through. Whether Geoffrey Cox, the Attorney General, can actually win some concessions. He was supposed to make a statement last week.
Well,
He didn't come back with anything then. Whether he's going to come back with something now, when the Prime Minister's basically said, if we don't get a decent deal, we'll just take a no deal off the table, I think is rather unlikely.
It's over. I was going to record a bit of Elvis this morning. It's over. We ain't going anywhere. I'm going to read a few tweets and we're going to leave. Brexit. I bet you're happy to hear that. Neil Gardner tweets, how you doing, Neil? Richie, the Brexit saga has at least taught us who is really in charge, and it's not the bunch of middle managers and amateur thespians who pose as politicians. Thanks, Neil. And I don't want to sound arrogant, and I know I'm going to. I don't think you and I needed Brexit to teach us who's really in charge, I think. In This Together tweets, 148 out of 232 Labour constituencies voted to leave. It seems that Corbyn's newfound love of the European Union is electoral suicide. It would appear that way, absolutely. David tweets, it's horrid weather where he is on the coast. It's going to hit the inland later on. This is me earlier on saying that the really bad weather we were promised hasn't materialised yet. Not yet. Not yet. Not yet. Hi to Samantha Jordan. Good morning, Samantha. How you doing? Thanks for the article. She's tweeted me an article in The Express, which I think might be along the lines of, or saying what I was saying earlier on, that the European Union is lying about the backstop being essential, number one, but it's also dragged on and dragged on and on and on and on and on and on, this whole process to get to the end, to force the delay, to cause the collapse of it. That's what's happening. There's no doubt in my mind. There's no doubt in my mind that is true. It's approaching 20 minutes past 11. March 3rd. It is Sunday, of course. Sunday View with me, Richie Allen, live right now on Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, richieallen.co.uk, triggerwarning.tv. The programme is on the TuneIn app as well, which is wonderful. And it's in a lot of places. It is archived on Spotify, iTunes, Podomatic, and there are many other podcast services that host this show, but I don't know whom they are. I see them sometimes. They don't ask permission. They just put it on there. That's fine. Player FM is one of those. I have no problem with that. And lots of places to find the programme if you missed it live. I'll read some more tweets, and then we're going to take a left turn, or an extreme left, or an extreme right turn, away from Brexit, and we're going to talk about other things. But we'll have a tune, because it's a Sunday. We'll have a tune. This is Charlene Spiteri and Texas on Sunday View with me, Richie Allen. Love this song. Keep those tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Talk to me this morning. Right, there's too much to talk about, so we better move on. Texas and Inner Smile on the Richie Allen Show. Gotta have an inner smile, you know. We've got royalty listening to this programme. Lord Twat Waffle is listening in live in Tasmania. One of the many, no, in the nanny state, he says, of Australia, where it's 10 o'clock at night. Lord Twat Waffle, you're very welcome to the programme. Good to have you on. Good to have you listening. Good morning to Susan as well. As I said, it's at Richie Allen Show. You know that by now. Keep those tweets coming in. Dean tweets, Richie, it's amazing how Brexit played out. You couldn't have been any more accurate with your prediction the day after the referendum. Yes, Dean, yeah. I think it was fairly obvious. To any Irish man or woman who has a little inkling as to what the European Union is, I've made predictions that were horribly wrong. First of all, I predicted that Remain would win, remember? I was convinced that all sorts of mischief would happen on polling day, and I thought Remain would win. So I do get things wrong, maybe more than I do right, when I have a punt with a prediction. But it's usually the small stuff. It's usually the details. But the overall picture, I think we understand what's happening. Let's talk about something else then. We're still on the front pages of the papers. Also on the front page of the Sunday Times today, and we have been following this closely, you and me, haven't we? Falconer reopens Labour hate cases. This is Lord Falconer, a real bum chum of Tony Blair. In fact, he used to share a flat with him. Playwright guy. He's the Labour peer drafted in to deal with the anti-Semitism crisis in the Labour Party. And he has admitted that stone cold, and that's a quote by the way, that's a quote from Lord Falconer, stone cold cases of hatred have been brushed under the carpet, and he vowed to reopen them so the culprits can be kicked out. No examples given, of course. According to the Times, Lord Falconer warned Jeremy Corbyn that he has no prospect of becoming Prime Minister unless he stamps out the conspiratorial worldview that fuels Jewish hatred on the far left. I could rearrange that statement by Lord Falconer and put it a different way. Jeremy, unless you bow down and suck some Zionist penis, you'll never be Prime Minister. Never, Jeremy, unless you start going to Labour Friends of Israel meetings and singing songs and promising that you won't rest a day ever in your life until you stamp out hatred against Jews. Unless you do that, Jeremy, you'll never be Prime Minister, is what I would say. Falconer said, unless you stamp out the worldview that fuels Jewish hatred, nobody hates Jews. I've said it 1,000 times, and I'll say it 1,000,000 before my career fades into absolute insignificance. Falconer says he doesn't believe that Corbyn is personally anti-Semitic, but he warned him that Jews feel they are not safe with Labour and its leader. And Faulkner said, "We have totally," this is a quote, "we have totally lost the confidence of the Jewish community and we have to get it back." Now, this is where the insipid, rotten to the core media fails to do its job. There is no Jewish community, number one. There are Jews living in England. But the idea that if there is a Jewish community, that they, as a community, do not feel safe is a monumental lie. We know this because you've only got to listen to the secretary of Jewish Voice for Labour, Glyn Secker, who is Jewish. And speaking at a meeting of the Dulwich and West Norwood Labour branch last Thursday, he said, this Jewish man, "What has happened is that there has been a major campaign of misusing anti-Semitism. And I say that as someone whose family has perished in the Holocaust and my partner's family. These allegations have been made up in order to discredit the leadership." So you see, when the newspapers say things like Faulkner says Jews feel afraid, it's bullshit. And I haven't even gotten into Orthodox Jews. And I've had a rabbi from an Orthodox Jewish community in Manchester on this programme laughing at the idea that anti-Semitism is on the rise, laughing at it. Just ain't happening. Anyway, back to the Labour peer and Tony Blair bum chum, Lord Faulkner. Faulkner said the most frightening thing is the profound and almost universal sense within the Jewish community that Labour and Corbyn are anti-Semitic. I've just debunked that. That is a lie. It's a lie. Let's hear some more from John McDonnell. He's the Labour shadow chancellor. He's Jeremy Corbyn's closest ally. And you heard him earlier on because he was on the Sophie Ridge programme on Sky. He was on Sky. Given a chance to take on these ludicrous claims, given a chance to point out that Jewish Voice for Labour members, almost universally, say that this is a nonsense, given a chance to go for the throat of the media, to go for the throats of the media and for all these lawyers and these Zionist activists, what does John McDonnell do? Well, he capitulates and says, yes, Labour clearly has an anti-Semitism problem.
Does the Labour Party have a problem with anti-Semitism?
Well, we clearly do. Yes, we clearly do. Look, these allegations that the...
But hang on a second. You clearly don't. Because Jewish Voice for Labour is a very big group. It's a significant group of people. And they say that these allegations are garbage. So you clearly don't, John. What happened to your balls, John? Why don't you just go for Sophie Ridge and say, listen, let's talk about policy. There is no anti-Semitism. I'm not having it. Let's talk about Brexit and all the other things we could talk about today. But no, it's apology after apology after apology.
The Labour Party is institutionally anti-Semitic. I reject completely. But clearly we do, and we've accepted that. It might be only what the figures that we've got. I think you interviewed Barry Gardner last week and he took you through the figures. So it's 0.1% of our membership seem to have been involved in some form of anti-Semitism. It's a tiny number, but it's still a problem. I do not want one anti-Semite in our party. I do not want one piece of evidence of someone being anti-Semitic. We've got to eradicate it from our party because our party has got to be in the lead with others in eradicating it from our society.
I mean, you say that there's clearly a problem with anti-Semitism in the Labour Party, even though you want to, of course, put that in context. But I just want...
You know what the real irony is here? You mightn't have gotten this. It's probably not occurred to you. So let me tell you what the real irony is. The real irony is, as McDonnell says, clearly, 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 clearly there is, in the absence of any balance, it's the job of Sophie Ridge to say, well, is there really... I've just had a tweet from Steve Gray. Thank you, Steve, who's linked to an article by my old friend Norman Finkelstein. I'll get Norman back on in the next few weeks on the programme. And Norman has done some mathematics. I've just retweeted Steve's tweet. And Norman's pretty accurate mathematics, because I've seen this before, demonstrate clearly that there isn't any issue with anti-Semitism, let alone... in society, but certainly not in the Labour Party. It's just, it's a nonsense. And Sophie Ridge, ironically, should be saying this. She should be pointing out that the Jewish Voice for Labour says, well, there isn't. She should be pointing out that many, many, many other folks who identify as Jewish are saying this is nonsense. That's her job. And it's all she has to do. It's very easy. But of course, she won't do it because her job is to fan the flames of this nonsensical story. It's fairly wretched stuff, isn't it?
I just wonder if everyone does agree with you on that, because it feels to me as if some members of the Labour Party don't accept there is a problem with anti-Semitism. We had, for example, Labour members cheering Chris Williamson when he said that Labour has been too...
You see, it sounds like on the face of it that Sophie Ridge is going to do just what I said she should do, which is say, well, other people say, but she's not doing that. She's not saying Jewish people, the Jewish Voice for Labour, all these people. She's having a go at the fact that Chris Williamson and others haven't towed the line. This is worthless journalism. It's worthless excuse for journalism and for process and for ethics and for the way to do your job. All she has to do is say, what about the Jewish Voice for Labour? They say it's not happening. But no, she invokes the fact that Williamson and Ken Livingston and others, it's wretched.
Too apologetic about anti-Semitism. And yet in the newspapers today, Joan Ryan, someone who left the Labour Party, has shared a letter that was sent to her constituency office saying, stop telling lies about Jeremy Corbyn, he's a decent man. You need to be shoved right back in the ovens. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn is leader. Does he need to do more here?
Yeah, we're all doing a lot more. I'm sorry Joan Ryan has left. I really am. I think it was a mistake. I would rather she'd stayed within the party and helped us tackle this issue. Where there seems to be some disagreements in some of these meetings that are taking place is where people are saying, you know, the Labour Party is institutionally anti-Semitic or institutionally racist. I reject that completely. But we have got a problem, and we've accepted that. And Jeremy's said time and time again, there is an issue here. There's a real problem that we've got to address and are addressing. And that's what we're doing. And
If you listen real closely here, you can hear Sophie Ridge's producers at Sky News Studios talking about going to fetch John McDonnell for his interview.
Well, wing out the gimp.
The gimp's sleeping.
Well, I guess you just have to go wake him up now, won't you?
The gimp. Who's going to wake up the gimp? Of course, the gimp knows that this is nonsense, but the gimp doesn't have the cojones to take it on. Now, let's talk just for a minute before we move away from this about Labour Deputy Leader Tom Watson, the Witchfinder General of Labour. He's going to root out all those god-awful anti-Semites. There's a video of Watson doing the rounds on social media this weekend. You probably saw it, maybe you haven't. It's a video of Watson singing Am Yisrael Chai at a Labour Friends of Israel event. Forgive me, my Jewish friends, if I mispronounce that, but I think it's Am Yisrael Chai, right? This is Watson singing it at a Labour Friends of Israel event. Just have a listen here, and I'll put it into context when we come back.
At a Shabbat meal with members of the Hull University Jewish Society. And if I get it wrong, blame my friend Nick. I'm Israel Chai, I'm Israel Chai, I'm Israel, I'm Israel, I'm Israel Chai, I'm Israel.
Goes on a bit. Yeah, a little barrel of monkey spunk. Tom Watson himself. Monkey spunk. I wanted to say that. I've been wanting to say that all morning. Am Yisrael Chai is a triumphalist song, roughly meaning, I've looked it up, the nation of Israel lives or is alive, basically. It's Zionist singing, we're still here, we're still alive, the Jewish nation rolls on, whatever our enemies do, and all of that old bollocks. Why is Tom Watson singing it? Dunno. There's been a lot of Zionists on social media over the last 48 hours. And you would have seen this if you are somebody who dwells on Twitter. I don't, but don't take me wrong. I'm not being condescending towards you. I know some of my listeners spend an awful lot of time on Twitter. That's your choice. I can't stand it, so I don't spend a lot of time on there. Lot of Zionists screaming on social media that it is offensive to question someone's loyalty if they are in public life or if they happen to be Jewish. Why? Why is it offensive and potentially anti-Semitic if you ask somebody, where does your loyalty lie? Who are you answering to? Because I'll tell you what, dear listener, I've been around a long time. I think it's fairly pertinent to ask people like Tom Watson and Priti Patel. Remember Priti Patel? Priti Patel, not very pretty, Patel, who went on holiday to Israel. She was the secretary for development, wasn't she? She was the development secretary, overseas aid and all of that. Took a holiday, went to Israel, never told anybody. Never told the government. Never told her boss. Never did. Just pissed off to Israel on holiday. Jews don't go to Israel on holiday. It's such a shithole. It really is. Jews themselves. I've got Jewish pals who would never go to Israel for a holiday. No, I'd rather go to Lanzarote, Richie. So why did she go to Israel on holiday and not tell her government? Espionage, maybe? I don't know. You might say, that's unfair, Richie. It might be. But nobody asked Priti Patel, what were you doing in Israel? Nobody asks Tom Watson, what are you doing singing Am Yisrael Chai when Palestinians are being butchered, children are being shot by snipers? Because I've said this before and it has to be repeated because nobody else is saying it. Israel is doing really, really well. It's doing incredibly well. The world turns a blind eye as it murders, sacks, rapes, pillages, tortures and displaces the indigenous population. It is no barrier to that, Israel. Nothing to stop it doing it. Nobody gives a fuck, basically. Israel attacks and bombs the sovereign territory of other states. Syria, of course, most recently. States that have not attacked or threatened Israel. So the point I'm trying to make here is this alleged vulnerability of Israel is a ridiculous myth. It's a myth. It's a nonsense. So why are so many members of parliament, members of Labour Friends of Israel and the Conservative Friends of Israel? Why? Labour has 80 members of parliament and 20 members of the House of Lords. That's 100 signed up to Labour Friends of Israel, which is a lovely, benign sounding group, but it's not benign at all. The Conservative Party only 4.5 years ago stated that 80% of Conservative MPs were members of the Conservative Friends of Israel group. And Tory party leaders, historically, Cameron, Duncan Smith, Michael Howard, have gone and had lunch and given addresses to the CFI. The British Home Secretary, the UK Home Secretary, Sajid Javid, has had business lunches and given business speeches to the CFI, with the Jewish Chronicle even saying that they see Sajid Javid as a future Prime Minister. Now, a couple of years ago, the Guardian journalist Ian Black said that the UK-Israeli lobby is effectively bankrolling the Conservative Party. This is true. And when Ian Black said this, he wasn't accused of anti-Semitism and there was no witch hunt to cost him or to try and get him ousted from his job. Why? Because they wanted to brush it under the carpet. These Friends of Israel groups are the most successful political lobbying groups in the United Kingdom. They are. So you might remember this. Back in 2007, David Abrahams, do you remember him? He was the deputy chair of Labour Friends of Israel. And he had spent millions in donations that he had actually given through junior employees of his, in his business. So he'd given his junior employees, he'd given them hundreds of thousands of pounds each to donate to the Labour Friends of Israel so that he wouldn't be caught doing it. He's an arch-Zionist, right? And he admitted in the Jewish Chronicle, this guy, the reason he concealed giving these donations, the reason why he didn't just fess up and say, all this money, won just over £1 million, is my money. was because he didn't want Jewish money and the Labour Party being put together. And it's gotten worse since then. So there are pertinent questions for Jewish MPs and non-Jewish MPs, like, you know, the ones we've mentioned regularly in the programme, the Jewish MPs, Luciana Berger, the non-Jewish MPs, Tom Watson, and all these people. Who are you in thrall to? Who are you answering to? Is it your constituents? Is it your party executive? Or are you in thrall to the State of Israel? Nah, that's anti-Semitic. No, it isn't anti-Semitic at all. It's a very important question. Peter O'Born did a fantastic documentary for Dispatches, Channel 4, back in 2009, about the Israeli lobby. I wasn't surprised by a single thing that he revealed, but at the time, I would have thought the Channel 4 viewers must have been shocked at the extent of the influence of the Zionist Israeli lobby in this country. I submitted to you the Tom Watson and Luciana Berger and Sajid Javid on the other side and many, many more of them are getting their political ideology, they are getting their opinions, they are getting their statements, they are getting their actions, everything they do is being dictated to by the Zionist lobby that controls them. Am Yisrael Chai. Am Yisrael Chai, sang Tom Watson. Now, Israeli soldiers committing war crimes, we know this, the United Nations 2 days ago came out and said, we believe that Israeli snipers were shooting at children deliberately, and the medical professionals and journalists, and killing them, even though they were clearly recognisable as such. This is the UN Commission of Inquiry on the killing of nearly 200 Palestinians between March and New Year's Eve last year. And they found that the Israeli soldiers were shooting children, medics and journalists. This is true. Am Yisrael Chai. Am Yisrael fucking Chai. That's what you get from UK politicians. Zionist-controlled politicians. That's what you get. Am Yisrael Chai. Children being shot in the face by snipers, by psychopaths. Not a word on it. Not a word of it. What does Israel say over the weekend? They say that they completely reject the findings, even though the video evidence is insurmountable as to what the snipers were doing. So you get the psychotic government of Israel coming out saying, nothing to see here, please disperse. It's bullshit. This is anti-Israeli stuff again. Everybody hates us. We have a right to self-defence and all of that bollocks. You have no right to exist, historically. Your only claim is the biblical promise. This is land that is not yours. You are a brutal occupier, a monstrous regime, subjecting people for decades to murder, imprisonment, torture and infanticide. Snipers murdering children. Not a word. Not a dicky bird from Tom Watson and from all the others who are members of Labour Friends of Israel and Conservative Friends of Israel, the most powerful lobbying organisation in the UK, owning lock, stock and barrel your politicians. So it isn't racist, it isn't anti-Semitic to ask, who are you working for? We know you're not working for Joe Smith living in Langworthy Road in Salford. We know that. Rebecca Long Bailey, by the way, on the television this morning apologising for anti-Semitism. She's a Salford and Eccles MP. She's disgusting to her bone marrow. Apologising for anti-Semitism on the Mar show this morning. You're not working for your local constituents. Who are you working for? You're not working for your party, the executive, or the hundreds of thousands of members. So who are you working for? And that's just one out of hundreds and hundreds of MPs. It's coming up for 14 minutes to midday. This is Sunday View with me, Richie Allen. Momentum put out a laughable video trying to debunk conspiracy theories and anti-Semitic tropes, basically saying there's nothing to see here when it comes to Rothschild. And by the way, if you're mentioning Rothschild, well, you're a racist. No. No, a laughable video. Again, I've asked time and time again, I've done the due diligence, I've upheld the highest ethical standards of journalism. I have invited these people on for a fair, rational, calm debate about these things, about the influence of Rothschild, Oppenheimer, Warburg, the banking cartels, the financial elites. But they'll never take up my offer to come on. Never in a million years. Look, I'm going to just briefly talk about this because there's been so much talk about it today. The Mail on Sunday and the Sunday Express have front page stories about a stabbing which happened in London over the weekend of a young girl. And there was a stabbing, I think, yesterday in Hale Barnes, which is near Altrincham, not far from where I am, where a 17-year-old boy was stabbed to death as well. Jodie Chesney was 17 and she was stabbed in the back and died. It's just getting a lot of comment today and I don't want to ignore it. So on the BBC Andrew Marr show, where the Daily Mirror's Alison Phillips, Julia Hartley Brewer, whom we've heard from already, and the historian Simon Shama, and they talked about the spate of stabbings that we hear about all the time, and they referred to the stabbings over the weekend. So let's hear Alison Phillips, Julia Hartley Brewer and historian Simon Shama talking about these stabbings. This is on the Marr Show.
There's a photograph of Jodie Chesney. She was 17. There's a picture of her in her Girl Scout uniform outside number 10 Downing Street. And I think it's really hit people this time because there's this sense, particularly being a girl, and that she'd gone to the park with her boyfriend and then something's happened on Friday evening and she's never going to be going home. And it brings that she's the 18th in London already this year. We're only at the start of March. There was another boy in Manchester has been stabbed, 17-year-old. And this problem seems to be getting worse and worse.
So there are stories which bubble along for a long time mm-hmm. and then something mm-hmm. happens which somehow kind of focuses the entire
yes.
country's
but
attention.
But we all know why, don't we? We all know why. Because again and again, dozens and dozens of young black boys are stabbed, but it's a young white girl is stabbed. And then suddenly it's a front page story. The reality is we often just write this off and say, oh, well, these are people involved in gangs who are stabbing each other. It's not our problem. Ignoring the fact that actually an awful lot of young people, white or black around this country, aren't going to be pulled into gangs because they don't live in the sort of areas where actually joining a gang is often about keeping safe rather than anything
but
else.
But I do think there's increasing this sense that even people who aren't in gangs feel that their children, they may be going out and they may be falling foul of a gang or a gang member on any particular night. And there's obviously, as with all things, there's always more than one cause. But, you know, we've seen 20,000 fewer police than we had 10 years ago. We're seeing a collapse in lots of young people services. There's many reasons
we're seeing
for
a collapse in families.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, I live a lot of the time most of the time in the United States, where it would have been that there's the same things are said really about gun violence. And the issue, really, the underlying issue, is whether we're really living in an age of lethal rage, where somebody just actually taking against somebody else or somebody trying out a crime now becomes actually a lethal crime. So what mm-hmm. do we do about it?
But we haven't changed as people. I mean, we're still the same kind of bipeds as we were before.
I think historically there are moments where civility collapses, actually. Mm-hmm. And I'm really not saying it's got anything to do with, you know, the kind of raw, toxic nature of polemics, but I don't think that actually helps. But the sort of sense, actually, of whether or not, in the first place, we do something about policing, which mm-hmm. how could you not be in favour of that, demands at least bringing back police to the levels they were before the cuts.
That's it in a nutshell. We've had Peter Kirkham on this programme talking about it. Decimating the police forces of every area of the country has meant you've not got bobbies, as it were, on the beat in communities, which traditionally was a great thing because you had the same police officers patrolling in the same areas, getting to know people, and in many cases they were able to nip stuff in the bud before things got out of hand. And there's a lot more to say about that and what's really going on with that, but it's a disturbing thing to constantly hear about children getting stabbed by children with zombie knives and stuff like that. It's a complex one and there are many reasons for it. I'm sure we'll get into it in future programmes. Last couple of papers, Daily Express, as I said, have a story about Jodie Chesney on the front page of its paper today. The Observer, Labour faces new row over efforts to curb anti-Semitism. I've already covered that, no need to get into that again. Let's briefly talk about Venezuela, because the vice president of the country, Delcy Rodriguez, has been speaking exclusively to RT's Spanish channel. And she has said that Caracas will use all legal means available to protect her assets in Europe and the US. they will do all they can to protect their assets overseas from illegal seizure. She also said that American political pressure is doing more harm than good to the country, and America has sent instruments of violence to the country, not aid. Here she is, Delcy Rodriguez, speaking with RT's Spanish channel.
Historically, we know that the US uses fake financial help in order to overthrow the governments of other countries. Venezuela is about to take financial help. They don't want to help economically, financially, to help with provision, with medicines, to help commercially. And on the 23rd of February, the whole world saw that they brought instruments of violence to Venezuela and not aid. I repeat, there is nothing new in this. They export violence to countries, but their plan won't work in Venezuela. We have decided to protect our country. President Donald Trump has put a face to the United States' imperialistic policy. It's a policy of cheating and threatening those who do not submit to their wishes, instructions, and interests. Specifically, Venezuela is threatened every day. There is a right-wing extremist movement that previously tried being part of Venezuelan politics, but they don't have the love or support of the Venezuelan people because they did not manage to earn it the correct way, which is by gaining votes. They did not succeed. They did not win the love of the people. And so they've become this violent and extremist group.
Yeah, Delcy Rodriguez there, the vice president of Venezuela. Now, you know, because you've heard it on this program, that the Bank of England is illegally holding over £1 billion, $1 billion worth of gold owned by Venezuela, owned by the country, saying that it's not going to, you know, release that gold, that it would rather deal with Juan Guaido, this absolute numpty, this US puppet who claims to be the legitimate president. He isn't. And what the vice president there, Delcy Rodriguez, has been saying is they're very confident that in international law, they've got the lawyers that will be able to protect their interests and basically restore Venezuela's access to its own assets overseas. This is going to run and run this, and it's a massive story. Going to finish with this bit of good news today. It was in the Mail on Sunday. The Mail on Sunday loves the whole gender identity and transgender line of stories. It's always doing them, the Mail. It loves it. Here's the headline. Britain's first transgender hate crime trial is halted after one day. As the judge says, there is no case and there never was a case. Brilliant. Isn't that good? Miranda Yardley was put through 10 months of hell after being accused of harassing a transgender activist on Twitter. What happened? Well, before we hear what happened, the district judge John Woolard dismissed the case after one day, saying there was no evidence. Campaigners called the decision a victory for free speech, while the accuser said that police were being used to enforce a political ideology. Yeah. So Miranda Yardley is an accountant who describes himself as a transsexual and identifies as a man, even though he underwent gender reassignment to become a woman 10 years ago. That's a bit complicated, right? It is for me anyway. Miranda Yardley describes himself as a man, even though he had surgery to become a woman. Okay. But Miranda believes that individuals cannot change sex. And because Miranda said that, he has drawn criticism on social media. Trans activists do not like that, particularly if it's from somebody they would regard as one of their own. So his accuser, a woman called Helen Islan, works with the trans advocacy group Mermaids, which campaigns for children who want to change gender. Mermaids is a completely batshit crazy group. They believe that if a child says, well, I'm not actually a boy, even though I have a penis, I am a girl, I believe I'm a girl, they want them to be allowed to self-identify. They're batshit crazy. So Helen Islan accused Yardley of a hate crime for saying that you cannot change sex. A hate crime. The judge threw it right out. Good stuff. The comedian Graham Linehan, who's had his own public argument with trans activists, said this is about ideology and everyone who has tried to speak up against it is shut down, and the activists are using every means they can to do this, including the courts. However, Essex police said, we take all reports of hate crime incidents seriously. So that's a good thing. But the BBC has just just announced that tennis legend Martina Navratilova has apologised for using the term cheating when discussing whether transgender athletes should be allowed to compete in women's sports. Ah, Martina, why did you capitulate? I thought you had a bit more gumption, a bit more spunk. Maybe not so much spunk, but a bit more gumption than that, Martina. She had basically said, Martina Navratilova, she'd been talking about one case where transgender cyclist Rachel McKinnon had won cycling races, and Navratilova had said, listen, this transgender cyclist obviously has an advantage over the female, over the real women that he's been or she's been or whatever has been racing against. I would agree with Navratilova, but Martina has capitulated like a dodgy house of cards. Ah, well. That's it for Sunday View. There was plenty more to talk about, but I'm running out of time. Got to keep this to an hour so that it repeats on the hour at the top of the hour. If you missed any of it, it'll be repeating round the clock on richieallen.co.uk. It'll also be on Podomatic, Spotify, YouTube and all the rest of it, as you know, because that's what we do. I will talk to you tomorrow at 5 p.m. UK time for Monday's Richie Allen Show. Thanks for tuning in today. Hi to Delroy, who's just tweeting me now. Got to go. Can't stay around. Going to leave you with Lick the Tins. This is a wonderful tune. It's their cover version of Can't Help Falling in Love. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Look after yourselves and one another. Hope you enjoyed Sunday View. See you tomorrow. Bye now. Bye.